Welcome. This is the Lady Leadership Podcast. Sam's goal is clear, helping as many women as she can meet their full potential in business and in life. Hi, this is Sam McIntyre, and in this season of the Lady Leadership Podcast, I'm going to be talking to you about how to get the most out of your career, whether you have your own business, whether you work in corporate, or whether you're just starting out, maybe you're finishing uni. So, joining me, and I look forward to sharing all my tips and hints on how to fast track your career. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Lady Leadership Podcast. I am super thrilled today to have Judith Beck on the show for the second time. We had such a fun time recording the first episode of this that we thought we should definitely do a part two. Now, if you've not listened to the previous part one, have a look, and it's called Not Letting Gender Hold You Back at Work with Judith. So thanks, Judith, for coming on the show again today.
Thanks for having me. It's fun. I always enjoy having a conversation with you.
I feel as though we must have known each other in a previous life. I feel like our families, like my background's all Irish and Scottish. There must be some relation somewhere.
100%. Exactly right.
Love it. Now, today we're going to talk about the top 10%, what the top 10% do. Now, when we talk about the top 10%, do we mean like, you know, the leaders of the company, you know, the people sitting in the offices in the big chairs and, you know, the ones with the nicer desks?
Well, yeah, they're the ones that I saw over my career of recruit executive search and consulting to companies that were at the top of their game. So the ones that the people you admire and you go, wow, they've really done a fantastic job, and they didn't have to, you know, sort of walk over bodies to get there, right?
Absolutely. Do you know what? I had the great pleasure of working with Greg Foran, who was at Woolworths and then ended up leading Tesco in the US. And then he's now actually gone to New Zealand. He's originally from New Zealand. And he is now leading Air New Zealand at a really difficult time. He actually took that role right before COVID. And he's someone that stood out in my career. Very, you know, just, you just sort of feel the energy coming off him. Does that make sense? And just, but, you know, wouldn't sort of pull people over the coals, just asked good questions, really.
Absolutely.
And something that stood out for me, so they used to do this big Woolworths get together, and they'd get all the store managers in from all stores for all brands, and they'd put on, you know, I actually called it Death by Woolworths, because it was a week long kind of, you know, seminar that, it was good fun, but it was long and tiring and, but, you know, good value. And I'll never forget seeing him. So it was in the exhibition center at Melbourne, and he was up. I was sort of coming in from a different exit, and he was up in the back of that, up the top levels, walking around practicing his presentation that he was about to put on. And I was like, there you go.
No matter what level you are, you've got to practice things and go through, you know, basics things. You never stop learning.
Yeah.
And improving.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the end of the day, I think the thing about top 10 percenters, they know that. And because if you think you know it all, you really know nothing.
Yeah. Okay. So why don't we go with that number one? If you think you know it all, then you really do know nothing.
I mean, there is not a day goes by really where you don't learn something new and you go, aha. And, you know, the senior people, and even through my own businesses that I had over the years, one of the things that I noticed with dealing with the best of the best is that they were, well, first of all, they didn't levelize. So that's that's something that I talk a lot about in the book, about people who are at the top of their game, know the power of treating everyone with respect, and they don't levelize people. So they include within their networks everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
Because everyone is part of your network. And so when they go into an office, they greet the receptionist, polite to the people who are in the teams, the assistants, everyone, because you never know when you might meet those people again. And they understand that. And they understand that, you know what? You need a lot of people to make a company successful. It's not about one. It never is about one person. Even if you're the person who came up with the idea, you can't do it alone. You need a team of people, and they're not going to follow you in the same way if you're not respectful of them. So one of the things that always stood out with the top 10 percenters is that they understand common courtesies and how powerful that is, that you can be a great leader and be polite and be kind and be, you know, firm but fair.
The way you do things,
you know, the way that because if you don't, it will always come back to bite you.
Absolutely. And, you know, you do want to work harder for people that you respect.
Absolutely. Why are you going to go the extra mile and work later hours or make that extra phone call or put a little effort in for someone who you can't stand? It just doesn't make good common sense, right?
It doesn't. It's an internal fight. I've been there, Judith. It's smacking your head against the wall going, gosh, I have to do this, but this person's an ass.
That's right. And you think, oh, my God, okay, I'll just get it done. But if it's somebody who you really respect and admire, like, oh, no, I really want to do a great job for this person, or, you know, they've been so great, I'll stay back, or I'll put that extra effort in. And, you know, I'll do more than what's required in my role. It's obvious, but not obvious to so many people, right? It's like, I always shake my head and I think, you know, why would you be the boss who comes in to the office in the morning and just walks straight to your office and doesn't say hello to your staff? There's so many people.
Oh, yeah.
That told me that their boss doesn't say hello to them in the morning. It walks right past and go. And I'm thinking, seriously, how did you get there?
I know. Well, that's a strange thing, isn't it? When you see that behavior, it does make you ask that question, like, how did you actually get there? I think the people that have gotten there have a great ability. So if they're missing those skills, they have a great ability to manage up. They manage differently. They manage down differently to how they manage up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I remember one time there was I was doing reference checking on someone, and the guy had a terrible reputation. And through the references of the people, because we had to do a 360, but boy, he knew how to manage up.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't put him forward, because at the end of the day, it's not about just, you know, you've got to manage your people. You can't just because you have a couple good references by people that you have so-called convinced that you're great. if the people in other divisions and that report to you don't respect you, then that's a problem. And so that's where reference checking doing a 360 is important to sort of
get the picture. But when the person in the cafeteria making the coffee knows who you are and doesn't like you, then there's a bit of a problem.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like, okay, if you decide who you're going to treat nice. I remember this is a story, like this was during a time when, you know, there was a downturn.
Yeah.
And so they were letting people go within this organization. And the person who I placed in the role, when I placed him in the role, it was supposed to just to be a maintenance role. Like, in other words, there were no problems, nothing. And then boom, there was a change. And so all of a sudden he had to make people redundant.
Yeah.
And people within the organization being made redundant. And he told me a story about how somebody was made redundant. One of the junior, it was like a tea lady. She was like the tea lady.
Yeah.
And she'd been there for like 30 years. And found out that they didn't treat her very nice. Like, the person who made her redundant didn't do the right thing as far as, like, we, you know, really appreciate your service, that type of thing. It was just like, boom. She was the mother of one of their major clients. who had a lot of, and he found out about it and did the right thing, obviously, but found out about it, you know. Oh my God, you don't treat people like this. Just because, you know, when people are being made redundant, it's an emotional thing. You need to treat them with kindness and respect. And, you know, and it's because it's one of the hardest things in the world to do. And T10Ps always knew that when they had to make people redundant, it was very tough for them, but they always did it in a respectful way. And, It wasn't, you know, one time during one of the last cycles, a particular company, they made a whole division redundant. And one of the people told me that didn't get made redundant, that they were just told, you're all going today, you're going now, we'll have to walk you out type of thing. And so then the ones that were there said that where the people had been sitting, it was like Pompeii. For about 2-3 weeks, the sandwiches were still there, the Coca-Cola bottles were still there. They hadn't cleaned up and they had to walk past that. Now, how does that, what kind of message would that have sent to the people who left? I would have been thinking to myself, if you treat them like that,
how are you going to treat me?
I'd be looking for a new job. I'd be, you know, having my eyes and ears open, because it could happen to you.
Yeah. So and that's how people feel. I've had to let people go and make large redundancies. And I've got to tell you, Judith, it was awful. It was dreadful. And, you know, people were in the office crying and it was just dreadful. Not fun at all. And I think, you know, on the back of that, I think that company should have at the time actually asked for voluntary redundancies. And the reason I say that is because we ended up with, so there was a bunch of people who possibly wanted to leave. We didn't know who they were, who'd been there for a long time. There was a bunch of people who wanted to stay. And then, you know, we were sitting there trying to decide who stays and who goes. And I don't know that we got it right either. So, and, you know, there was people left there that wanted to go and didn't, you know. And it was an organisation that had people sort of there for a long time. Do you know what I mean? There'd been some really serious lengths of service, et cetera. So some people, if they're made redundant, you know, was like a retirement type package really for them. Yeah.
Absolutely. And the thing is that, you know, the people who want to go, I know, because companies probably think, oh, it's going to cost us too much to pay them out. But in the long run, it's going to cost them more.
Absolutely. Because
if someone's just sitting there waiting for a payout, how effective and how, you know, how well, are they, you know, how effective are they going to be? They want to go. Once their mindset is, I want to go.
Yeah. You know, yeah. And then when they see everyone else going and they can't go and they're made to turn up each day. Yeah.
That's exactly right. And you know, I know people who have, because the companies were good to them, have taken a redundancy, gone away for a year, come back to the company, get made redundant. I know one person who had been made redundant by the same company 3 times.
They were probably pretty happy.
They were crap. The reason they came back is because they left with a good impression.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were still loyal to the company. And where, you know, at the end of the day, financial services, which is the area that I dealt in, they really need to take note of that, because those are their customers too.
Yeah, true. So in terms of what the top 10% do, just that ability to keep learning and focus on learning. And like you said, if you think you know it, you most likely don't. That ability to be polite to everyone, so respect and kindness and to listen to people, you know, which is tough, I think, when you're in a senior role. You know, I know that it was something that I struggled with a little bit in terms of being watched by a lot of people in terms of what you do. Everyone sort of wanting a piece of you. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
How do you recommend people sort of deal with that? Like just, you know, having to be quite clear with your boundaries.
I think the thing is that the one thing about T10Ps is they're very good communicators.
Yeah.
And they don't gloss over things.
Yeah.
They're very good about setting the expectation. And they're also very good about knowing why they are doing something and communicating why they are doing something to their staff, why they're doing something. So in other words, your role is important because of XYZ. You might be at the most junior role within your area. But hey, that role is important, because if it doesn't get done, there's a domino effect.
Yeah.
And so often people don't understand the why they're doing their role.
Yeah.
And so they're good at communicating that.
Mm.
And that's part of not levelizing. That's part of making sure that your team know that we're all in this together. There's no one person who's better than the other. This is a puzzle that we all fit together to get that picture.
Yeah. And that leader kind of, I think, you know, needs to be a bit of an expert in PR, really. And, you know, PRing, say, their division or their team. And then, like you said, that regular communication to the team about, you know, what's going on, really.
Absolutely. And being honest, you know, being upfront and when we look at times when people have been made redundant, a lot of times people just want to know, or if there is something, they just want to know. So just tell them what you know. And if you don't know anything, tell them you don't know anything. But it's having that hands-on approach as far as being able to communicate. So the feedback that I always got from candidates in the past about why people were good leaders, what they felt was a good leader, is that they always knew what was happening in their area. There was a clear understanding. They were kept up to date. They felt that their leader wouldn't ask them to do anything they wouldn't do themselves.
Gotcha. Yeah, right? That's true.
You know, you hear some of these leaders out there, so-called leaders, that say, oh, you know, don't worry about that. Just focus. I'm just going to focus on the 20% and all that other stuff. But the reality is, the good leaders always knew the detail, had done, you know, understood the detail, understood the jobs.
Yeah, yeah. Right? Prepared to get into the detail if they needed to do to help sort something out.
Exactly. So if there was a rush on something, they were in there with the troops, right?
Yeah.
They were there with their rolling up their sleeves, getting in there and do it. They didn't brush it off.
Yeah.
They never said, no, that's not my job. Or I'm too good to that.
Yeah.
They would always be, well, hold on, let's get you some help. Let's do something. Explain to me what the problem is. And that comes back to being a good listener.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So from a management point of view, they were always the people who would, when they would go, for example, when I placed someone and they were going into a new company or into a new role, they didn't go in there full steam ahead out, you know, I'm getting rid of these five people. I'm bringing in my own team from the other company. They would go in there and they did a proper assessment.
Yeah.
And they would speak to every single person and find out how they're thinking. And then they would do an assessment about who's on the bus and who's not on the bus.
Yeah.
And then find out what's working, what's not, before they would do. And very rarely would they, part of the thing that they top 10 percenters do, they're not going to bring people from their old company.
I was going to raise this point, because I think it's a bit of a mistake that I've made in my career, is bringing in some people that I know, and then and even though they're great people, there does become that stigma.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, the problem is that if there is a job, so let's say you go into a new organization, your mandate is to grow it.
Yeah.
And look at the current team and see who's on the bus or who's not. The thing is, a good leader will go, okay, I'm going in there, but there's a process that needs to happen, a recruitment process, which HR needs to get involved with. And we need to look at and give the opportunity to our existing staff, as well as looking for new talent.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to just call my buddy up and say, I'm going to give you a job and here's a letter of offer. If I know someone, I'm going to refer that person into the process for somebody else to assess about whether or not they're good enough or not with everyone else. So, you know, it's really important that, you know, because people, if I did assignments, managers would refer people they know, but they referred them into my process. And they said, we've got a role. I'm not going, because the worst thing you can do is mandate someone and saying they're the best thing since sliced bread into the company and then no process.
Yeah.
And that person is not as good as they were as you thought.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And so then you feel guilty about it because you think I brought them in or they're not as good. Or, but also other people will talk about the fact that, well, they brought their buddies in and they didn't even go through a process.
Yeah. I've done both. I've brought people in for a role. And then I've gone through a process as well and given that opportunity. And I'd have to say I'm cautionary about doing it in the future, because you do get that stigma of it's their buddy, or regardless of the capability. And the people that I've brought in have been highly capable. And you also get that, you know, when you're changing an organization, people have been capable at one level, and then the organization changes and you bring new people in, the capability of the whole place lifts, but these people maybe don't move with that capability. Do you know what I mean? So they might have been good in the old way of doing things, but they haven't quite transitioned to that next stage. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And the thing is, if they don't work out the way that you thought they were going to work out, and you referred them, if they've gone through a proper process, at least then you can say they went through the process.
Yeah.
They were reference checked properly. They did all the, whatever the company has, psych test or whatever. They did all that. That then will get you off the hook as far as people going, well, she hired her friend and it didn't work out.
Yeah. Look, I had the situation in one organization where I was seen to have hired, you know, a bunch of people that I knew, but I didn't hire hairdressers, you know, for an IT organization. Like, I hired, you know, well-respected, well-functioning, really, you know, top talent, essentially. And they've all gone on to do amazing things as well since then. But yeah, it was like I'd hired a bunch of my friends, which I hadn't. Do you know what I mean? So I am a bit kind of cautious about that now because of that pace. Yeah.
And that's where either your HR area will come in handy, or an external recruitment consultant, because the thing is that a fresh eye can then look at those candidates then and go, yeah, I know the one that you referred is really good, but this other one is really good too, and will compliment you.
Yeah.
Rather than being too much alike. So they'll likely, if they're good at what they do, they'll likely be able to sort of, or even another manager within your organization who's part of the interview
process. Yeah. Do you know what, Judith? I did all those things. I really did feel like I did all those things. It just still didn't quite cut it. Do you know what I mean? There was quite a bit of undertones of bad behavior in that place. So I think that kind of still just continued. So maybe it didn't matter. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, at the end of the day, you know, you've got to do what's right for you and what works.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Okay. So good communication, proper assessments, not bringing in your buddies. Yeah.
Not bringing your buddies. And I think, you know, if we look at people who are, who were top 10 percenters that stand out and why, they're very good about owning their achievements and being able to quantify their achievements. So the people that, when I interviewed them, I knew exactly when I was interviewing that those were their achievements.
Right.
Because they were
They're not taking other people's achievements and brand.
They're not taking other people's achievements. That, you know, I do this thing called the so what principle. And so if someone tells me an achievement and I can still say so what at the end of it, they haven't told me enough. So, you know, the thing is that if someone came in and said, I developed a new program for the marketing department, full stop, I'd go, so what? Could have been the worst program in the world.
Yeah.
But if they said, I developed a new marketing program for the marketing department that improved productivity by 30% and saved the company $100,000, that's a statement.
Gotcha.
And the T10Ps could quantify. And they were good at being able to, I did this. I came up with this idea. This is what we did. And here was the result. So your situation task, how did I analyze it? And what STAR principle, situation task, analyze it. And what was the result? Mm. And if you think about that, when you talk about your achievements, then you'll hit the nail on the head every time. And also they're honest. So the worst thing you can do is overstate achievements, because it will always come back to bite you if you overstate your achievements. So you've got to, you know, really just go, this is what I did, and don't overstate it. Don't understate it either. you know, just say it like it is.
Yeah. I think sometimes I've struggled with that in terms of kind of people believing it. Does that make sense? Like, and I don't know whether that's being a woman or, you know, what does that make? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's sometimes I've been in interviews in my lifetime where I feel as though I'm having to really, what's the word, kind of defend or, you know, justify what I've done. Does that, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, look, I get that. I got that question all the time when women say, oh, you know, I don't like talking about my achievements. I feel I'm going to come across as arrogant I don't know how to, I don't know how to sort of get it out and quantify it and things like that. And so I've worked with them a lot of times and sort of go, and, you know, a lot of times they just underestimate what their achievement is. And so when we get right down to it, you know, I'll say to them, you got to get it. Before you go into an interview, you need to look at what your achievements are. That, first of all, you need to list them on your resume.
Yeah. Yeah.
You need to look at what they are, do the so what principle, quantify them. Mm. And then when you're in an interview, have that bullet point list in your head. Think about what that situation was, what you had to do to get it, do the task,
yeah,
and result. And so think about that in here and then say it with passion. Cause a lot of times the women will go, oh, well, you know, I did I got 120% of my budget this year.
Yeah. 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 And that did X. Yeah.
And that did X. And then say it with passion, be proud of it.
Yeah.
And, if you say it with passion, it never comes across as arrogant.
Yeah.
Because people will see the passion in your, the twinkle in your eye. Mm. They'll see it. They'll see that you're excited about it.
Gotcha. And,
you know, I've interviewed people from the same company where they've all had the same achievement on their resume at three different levels. And that's right.
Just repeat that. You've interviewed people where they've had the same achievement
on their resume
at three different levels.
At three, so they're all from. So basically, I'm doing an internal.
You've interviewed three people who've all saying I did X.
I did this, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so then you can tell when you're interviewing who the person who actually did it.
Who's the driver? Yeah.
Who's the driver and who took the. Who took it to the photocopier?
Yeah, gotcha.
So you can tell because they know everything about it. And they go, I did it, you know, and
they can tell you the process. They can tell you why they did it, what the process was, and then what the outcome was. Yeah.
No hesitation, because the truth is easier to remember. They don't have to try to conjure it up and make it up. That is so true.
You can't remember lies. You absolutely can't.
You can't.
Unless you're a narcissist and you've really convinced yourself and you've done a good job.
That's right. And a lot of them believe it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I got to tell you something funny. My husband often says, like, I'm amazing. You know, he's not a facetious or ego-driven guy, and he'll be like, I'm amazing. And if he listens to that, he's convinced himself that he is, you know.
You know what? Sometimes we need to have positive affirmations, you know. I can do this. I'm amazing. I'm amazing.
That's right. He says it like he'll look at himself in the mirror and be like, oh, I look good today, you know.
And you know what? You should say to him, and one day it may be true.
too funny. Okay. What else should our top top tenants do?
Look, they're very good at owning mistakes as well. So they're very good at owning their mistakes. You know, if they make a mistake, they cop it.
Yeah.
And they don't throw people under the bus.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they'll find a way to fix it. And I think that's always that's always stood in my mind when I've seen them. They've been that way. They also are really good about, with some of the people I dealt with, I used to go into their offices, and their offices before the, you know, hot desk type situation.
Don't we love that? Yeah.
Would be organized.
Yeah.
They're very good about getting rid of the clutter.
I was going to say they're organized.
You know, when there's, and I always took, in my own business, I always felt that, you know, with the consultants and things like that, I'd say, you need to, you know, whatever you need to be organized, because if you have papers flying all over the place, things will get lost, you know, they'll get missed, whatever you need, filing cab, whatever, you know, whatever it takes to be organized. Cause I always thought, you know, uncluttered mind,
yep,
you know, you'll be more focused, that type of thing. It's kind of like, you know, it's cleaning your closet out every once in a while.
So well, tell me about there. It. Right. I can't work if it's not organized.
Me too.
I can't have clutter kind of everywhere.
So they were very good at that. I always noticed that. And, you know, I always noticed that that was something that, you know, they were, because then they knew where they stood. Oh, and they always had a proper to-do list.
Yeah.
You know, whether it was, nobody's got a memory so good that they can remember everything that they need to do.
Yeah.
You know, they prioritize. So they're good at doing that. And one of the things that really sticks in my mind that a T10P is really good about, and it goes with them their whole career. And it's the simplest thing, because the simplest things is what you need to do to be at the top of your game. It's not the hard technical stuff that goes with the territory, depending on what you are, what, you know, where you are, but there's a lot of people who know the technical. So it's the little things that get you to the top. And one of the things that they do religiously is they return their phone calls.
Oh,
they return their phone calls. And if they cannot return their phone call, they will get their assistant to return that phone call and let them, that person know. And that's part of that not levelizing.
It's interesting you say this, because what used to frustrate me is when I would get random calls from people trying to sell me software when I was a CIO and say I couldn't answer it. I didn't see the value in returning it because I didn't want that software. And it used to really irk me. And maybe that's because I am someone who likes to return phone calls.
Yeah. But you know, that's kind of even a different thing. Cause when you get people who are calling and selling you stuff like that, well, one, a quick no.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Not interested. Cause I used to get them calling at the office.
Yeah.
Not interested. We have a supplier. Yeah. Thanks for calling. Cause I know it's a tough job. Thanks for calling.
Thanks if for calling.
Anything.
If they take a breath, Judith, like sometimes I've been on that phone for 5 minutes just thinking, no, please take a breath because you're on your spiel now and I feel so bad, but I'm just not interested. It's not on our agenda at the moment. Yeah.
And if they're not courteous and if they're not respectful, then I don't have a problem with, I would give that always, you know, any supplier or anything like that. That should be delegated.
Yeah. But the top 10 is return phone calls.
They return phone calls from, you know, clients or, you know, their staff, whoever, anybody, because they don't know. That could be a very important phone call. Right thing to do. And you know what? As a headhunter, the guys always return their phone calls.
Right.
And the girls less likely to return the phone calls, hate to say it.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, do you know what? I think you pointed something out there. Yeah. Look, I got to say, I think I'm someone that always returns phone calls because it's, like you said, politeness and what do you need, and you've called me for a reason.
They'll go, who is she? Why is she calling me? Then look it up or whatever. Oh, it's a headhunter. And I was like, those are the people you should be calling back.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And the other thing is what I've noticed on LinkedIn. So if I send a connection and it's a male, I'm more likely to get them to, especially when I was doing executive search, they would respond right away.
Yeah. Like,
right away.
Yeah.
And even today.
I know what you're going
to
say.
Oh my God. This just happened to me last week. And I was connected to somebody who, I've met, and actually two people, one actually came back to me and said, and I had met her at a conference, but she, have I met you before? Blah, blah, blah. And so I,
what's it matter? It's LinkedIn.
But the funny thing about it is that I have a, on LinkedIn, I have a, what do you call it? You have different grades of
membership.
So I can see when people are looking at my profile.
Yeah.
Not everybody knows that or can do that or on that.
Yeah, I've got that too. I can see people looking at me, but they can't see me looking at them.
Exactly. Exactly. So the one last week who I have met several times, and anyway, I saw that she looked at my profile and she didn't connect.
And you were just like, why?
I started laughing because I thought, oh my God, first of all, you know, I'm not a bad person to know because I'm out of financial services, but I know a lot of people and I'm still referring people for big jobs, even though I'm not doing executive search.
Yeah.
I'm still referring people.
You've still got a network.
They're still calling me to say, who do you know?
Correct.
And this person's even, she's at a senior level, but she hasn't made it exactly to the managing director level yet.
Yeah.
And I'm going, but I'm thinking, why is it that, because I sometimes think women overthink it.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking.
Yes. Yeah. No, you're right there. I was talking to someone the other day and she was saying that a bunch of recruiters wanted to link in with her, but she thinks it's because maybe they want to place people where she is. I'm like, who knows? Maybe they want to offer you a great job. Just say yes. Like, what's the big deal?
Just say yes. And at the end of the day, even if they wanted to place people with her, you need to, if it's somebody, like if she's in a, you don't want all the people going, okay, here's a candidate who you've got to pretty well say, look, we're not recruiting right now.
Correct.
We do have a process. We go through our HR, whatever. If you want to contact the HR, if you have good candidates, then because sometimes they will have great candidates and maybe you should see them. But if they're, again, I think we talked about this last time. You got to look at their backgrounds.
Yes. Yeah.
And you
said
gotta
that.
See
yeah.
Whether or not. Yeah. And, yeah. And the thing is that it's kind of like connecting with LinkedIn. And when the people didn't connect, I'm thinking, one, I'm not trying to sell anything.
Yeah.
So it's unlikely that I'm going, except my book, but hey, it's like, we don't make anything off a book. So it's not.
I'll tell you something funny, Judith, which I've done. And I had maybe had a little bit more time on my hands. People have contacted me selling me something and I've responded with, you might want to have a listen to my podcast. Because they've been trying to sell me something that I don't want. So I'm like, here, yeah, this might be of interest.
You know, and that's another thing with LinkedIn too. So, and I get where people would get annoyed. But so then I accept a connection and then immediately I get
somebody
coming in and selling, selling a coat. And I'm thinking, I'm past the coaching session, you know, or the webinar or whatever.
So yeah.
So you haven't read my
bio. Profile. Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. I've been tried to be sold like fitness, you know, like I'm an overworked executive.
I've gotten those too.
Yeah. And I'm like, you know, I horse ride four times a week. I'm all good, thanks. You know, like I'm okay. If I can still get myself on a horse at nearly 50 and, you know, lope around, I think I'm all good on the fitness side of things.
You know, the thing is when you get those contacts, it's not like if someone is then going to hassle you and keep selling you, then you just block them off your contact list if that's the case.
Yeah.
But all the other people who are in your contact list, why, if they're in your industry, why wouldn't you want them on your contact list? Now, as an example, if I was doing a role for someone who needed to be an influencer, like in other words, a national sales manager, a general manager of sales, or someone who needs to bring business in.
Yeah.
One of the first things I would do is I would look at their LinkedIns. And if they had 50 contacts, I'd go, how connected are you? Not.
Yeah, true. Right? Yeah. And do you know what? When LinkedIn first came around, I sort of had a rule for myself that I wouldn't link in with anyone I didn't know. I think I was kind of on the Facebook side of things, you know. Mm-hmm. I think I'd probably have twice as many, and I got rid of that rule ages ago, but I think I'd have twice as many contacts if I'd actually just kind of said yes.
I know. I was the same way. I got it and I went, what is this LinkedIn thing? Mm. And I'm like going, I don't have time for this stuff kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then clients were sending me invitations. And so then I thought, well, I can't not connect with the client. So of course, and then I realized what it was. Then I started to think, okay,
here's the value.
And then I remember saying years ago, this is going to replace the, you know, LinkedIn have a an ulterior motive for this. This will be a recruitment tool in the future, which it is now.
Yeah, true.
Right? And probably a really good one. Yeah. And because you see it's got a job board and the whole nine yards. And so, you know, when you start looking into it, I'm thinking, okay, as long as it stays business oriented, I don't want to see pictures of food or any of that stuff. So they kept it pretty good that way.
Yeah.
And it is a good tool. And so as long as they keep it as a business tool, it is a good business tool. I mean, I used to have to look up my clients did you remember the Blue Book? You probably didn't, because I'm a lot older than you. The Blue Book, we used to have the Blue Book, and it came out every single year. And in it, it had all the managing directors, your people, and the size of the company. So I had to go buy the Blue Book every year, flick through it to find out who the people were. And I had a Rolodex.
Yeah, right. Wow.
And
yeah.
Call cards and those.
Oh, kinds. I remember having business cards piled up on my desk. Yeah. And I was going to say, if anyone's going for a job, a good tip is to actually look at the other job advertisements that company are putting up to see what the rest of their structure looks like. And then also looking at people's profiles, particularly in IT, looking at other people's profiles doing certain jobs, because you can find out the systems that they have, because they'll often have listed their experience in certain systems which that company might use.
Absolutely. And then, you know, and go in and look at who all the people are within the organization.
Yeah, yeah. And then have a look at who's looked at them. So particularly if you're wanting to get yourself a good list of recruiters, have a look at who else people have viewed when you're looking at someone that you know is a recruiter. They might.
And, you know, the other thing is that when you are managing a team, you should have on your LinkedIn thing that people cannot see your connections. They can see that you have 500 plus.
Oh, right.
They can't see, you put it in your LinkedIn that they can't see, other people can't see any connection that you don't have jointly.
Oh, okay.
Right? And the reason being is, guys, it's a little headhunter tip.
Oh, yeah.
The headhunters will go in there and see who your team are.
Yeah, right.
Because you're more likely going to be connected with your team.
Yeah, gotcha.
So if you put on your LinkedIn, I only want my connections to see the connections that we have. That's one of the reasons why a headhunter would connect with you as well, because they would think, oh, well, then I can see who her connections are.
Yeah.
Which is what I did in the early days of LinkedIn.
Yeah. And, I mean, I've had people connect with me and say, we apparently know 250 people in common, so we should know each other. Yeah. Hey, Judith. All these tips are in the book, aren't they?
They're all in the book, and we go into the details. The other thing is that the T10Ps don't put up any barriers, so that is really important.
And what do you mean by no barriers? What does that mean?
You know, so often we put things, I can't do this, or I can't do that.
Yeah, sorry, I'm not free for 3 weeks. Yeah, you can't, my diary's full. You can't get into my diary for another 6 weeks, and I can't possibly talk to you for 10 minutes. Yeah.
Or I'm not going to go for that job because, I haven't done it before, or they assume that they're going to hire someone else. Like I had this girl called Rumi.
Oh, they think I'm not good enough. They don't think I'm not good enough.
That's right. Or they think, so this girl rang and she goes, we had actually heard that there was a role going, and a good role too. And so I spoke to her and I said, are you going to go? Oh, no, I'm not going to go for this role because they always go external. And anyway, I go, you're going to go for this role and we're going to get your advocate. And we're going to help you. We're going to do some role playing and get your resume together and that type of thing. And so anyway, we did, and we helped her. Her advocate helped her. And anyway, she went for the interviews, and the boss's boss said to her, I had no idea you were interested in a management position.
Yeah.
And, you know, because she was a relationship person, managed a portfolio of clients. So therefore, doing a great job.
Yeah.
So why don't we just leave her there?
Yeah. Right. Not told anyone what she wants to do. Yeah.
She never told me she wanted to be a manager type of thing. So her boss was going, why am I going to let one of my best team members upset the apple cart if she's happy because she's never told me that she wants to manage. So anyway, the boss's boss was pleasantly surprised that she wanted to grow and to be a manager. She went through the whole process. Moral of the story, they never went external at all for the role. So that is
wrong. She told herself.
Talked her out of it. Now, she got down to the final two, and because of the cycle that they were in, they put the position on hold. And so they didn't hire for that. But about 6 months later, she got a promotion in another area because of that process.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So right. She wouldn't have done it and put herself out there. And if she, you know, that's why T10Ps, they don't put barriers. They don't perceive. They just think, hey, if I'm right, they'll tell me.
Yeah. I'll give it a go. Yeah.
I'll meet someone.
I was going to say the other thing I think too, when we were just talking about that the top 10 do is they don't hold their people back either. So they won't hold someone in a role.
No way. They are so good. They become, it's their mission virtually to help their team, because they know that if their team do well, it's
they
a direct reflection on them.
That's right.
And that's where they're confident. And so they'll delegate, and they're not afraid for a team member to make a mistake. Because if I don't give them something,
they're not
going to challenge. They're never going to. So
yeah, they're not going to learn.
Yeah, they're not. They're not perfectionist.
Yeah,
you know, T10Ps are not perfectionists from the point of view that they're so worried about making a mistake.
Mm.
So they know that, you know, mistakes happen. That's how we learn. People need to be challenged. Otherwise, they're going to leave. Better for them to be promoted than to leave the organization and go to your competitor.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're very good about that. And also, I've seen over the years where sometimes people that you're working for that you've helped, you're going to be working for them in 10 years.
Correct. That's right. I feel as though I'm heading into that era now myself.
Well, it goes around, comes around.
Correct. That's right. Be careful who you're not kind to on the way up, because, you're coming back down again.
That's it. They're very conscious about their brand and how they're being, you know, perceived, and, you know, that they want to do the right thing. So, and that doesn't mean they're not a strong leader.
No, that's right. Yeah, they've got boundaries. They've got limits. They can have an honest conversation. So true.
They make quick decisions too.
Yes. So
they'll make quick decisions. They won't dwell on it and, you know, sort of ask 25 people. They'll go, okay, I've got enough information now. I'm going to make the decision. And I'm going to live and die by the sword. Right?
Beautiful. So I think people should write a list about what we've just talked about and maybe rate themselves on those. If they're aspirational and they want to, you know, enhance their career, I think they need to go and buy your book too, Judith.
I hope they go out and buy my book. Hey, I just heard last week that it, with the Royal Society of Arts, it's a finalist for Career Book 2021.
Oh, congratulations.
Oh, thanks.
Beautiful.
I'm owning that achievement.
Absolutely. I love it. I love it. Judith, so fabulous to have you on the show. And I think we'll be connecting again, I'm sure.
Absolutely. No, it was fun. No, it's always fun. And like I said, it's easy to be a T10P if you do these things consistently. And, you know, they're not hard. They're not hard at all.
Yeah. No, there's some pretty simple ones there.
The elevator pitch is the other one. They know their elevator pitch.
Yeah. When you jump in the elevator and can say to someone, this is what I do, or this is what I've done, and this is what I want to do. Yeah.
Oh, and you know what? One of the things that T10Ps will do is when they go to networking events, at every stage in their career, the younger ones as well, and this is a good tip, is that they will go up and introduce themselves to the person who's standing by themselves, a senior person. Because the senior person, people think, oh yeah, they know everybody. They'll have, you know, they might be talking, if they're talking to other people, well, you don't go in and
interrupt. Yeah, don't go and interrupt. But
I made great connections by going up to people at conferences and who I knew were senior standing there, because everybody's afraid to go up and talk to them.
Yeah.
And they feel, they actually feel self-conscious because they're standing there by themselves. Who wants to stand there by themselves?
No, right? No one.
And so they actually feel good when someone comes up and introduces themselves. And if you're working at the same company and you're a younger one and you've gone up and there's the managing director, general manager, and you go, and you know who they are, and you go, "Hi, Mary, I'm Susie, and I work in," say, "I thought I'd just come up and introduce myself." Who's not going to be impressed? I would be totally impressed.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And you'd say, "Hey, thanks for introducing yourself. Really nice to meet you. What are you doing?"
Exactly. And that's where you need to know, you need to be able, this one girl at one of our round tables said, she was the head of legal. And she said, "I do not know how to do my elevator pitch." And a very senior person, obviously head of legal, this large company. And her girlfriend, who was like head of operations, was sitting next to her. And she goes, "I know exactly what you should say," because we were doing role plays.
Yeah.
And she goes, "What?" She goes, if you meet someone senior and they say, "What do? You should say, "I keep the company out of trouble."
Oh, yeah.
Love That's it. A brilliant elevator pitch.
Yeah.
You know, and it says it all. And if you're head of operations, I make sure the systems work.
Yeah.
If you're head of sales, I bring the business in the door.
Yeah, nice.
You know, so an elevator pitch should be simple.
Yeah.
You know, and what you do. And that's the why. See, that's part of that why.
I like that. Yeah. simple elevator pitch.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
And conversation doesn't have to get highly technical and in
that's right. And look, I also think you should go to networking events by yourself. And the reason I say that is because you will actually need to make an effort and talk to people. Whereas if you go with a friend, you'll stick with your friend.
Oh my God, people will sit. And when we used to go to the conferences, and I would say to the consultants, "Nobody is sitting together." It's kind of like conquer and divide, right?
Everybody
go, and otherwise we would all be sitting at the same table talking it to each other. And what do we need to do that for? That's not what we're here for.
Correct.
So I would never let them go in twos or walk around. No, walk around by yourself and meet people.
Yeah.
That's what it's about.
Yeah. Yeah. And I must admit, I wasn't someone who loved going to events, and when I started, I'd take a friend because I didn't love going to them. And then I got more confident, and then just started going to things myself and thought, well, if I'm not enjoying myself or if I haven't met anyone, I can just leave, so.
Absolutely. And at those conferences, a lot of times you can go up to how they have the different booths. The different booths, and
they sold some software. Absolutely.
Talk to them. How's it going today?
Yeah.
So it's a little awkward. It's always going to be awkward at first.
You're going to meet some great people. You'll potentially talk to some awkward people. You'll potentially talk to some great people.
And you know what? They're probably just feeling the same way, and they're probably feeling awkward as well. So it's kind of like, I always go, what do you got to lose? You got nothing to lose.
Got nothing to lose. So good, Judith. Gosh, maybe we need to do a part three. Thank you so much for being on the show today. I just love all the advice and tips. I just know the listeners are going to love it. And, go and buy Judith's book, because I think if you're looking for career inspiration and looking for some great practical advice on how to do it, then, absolutely.
Great. Fantastic. Well, thanks for having me.
No problem. Thank you.
I'll see you later.
Thanks, Judith.
Bye.